Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from New Orleans, Louisiana. Welcome to the show, Justin Greenleaf.
Hey, Victor. How are y'all doing? Good morning.
Great to have you here. Now, Justin, you and I have worked together on some projects. You're an architect based in New Orleans, and you actually have a decent-sized firm there performing work on a wide span of different asset types. But maybe before we dive into the details, give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Sure, absolutely. I've wanted to be an architect my whole life, and that just kind of happens. Keep to the path. It kind of works out, and opened a firm 9 years ago this month, actually. In close to that first decade under our belt, we've grown to about, we're steady at 15 people right now and doing a wide range of projects. Everything from, when we worked with you with some multifamily and assisted living projects, and everything from that to schools to public work, a lot of office buildings, and then some medical work. That said, we range from basically Texas to Florida, with most of our work being in the greater New Orleans region.
Fantastic. Now, the last year in particular, we've seen a shift in the market. A number of projects have been paused. A number of projects have been put on hold. How has that affected your business? Has it gone through a bit of a dry spell, or what's been going on?
Yeah, good question. It's interesting because it's unprecedented, right? So we don't know with the amount of money that's kind of been pumped into the economy after COVID and rising construction costs with lead times and availability of building products. It's different than I think anybody's ever seen. With all that said, construction costs and rising interest rates have caused some of our projects to either go on hold or not start as quickly as everybody would have planned. There has been, I've noticed, a little bit of a dip or downturn. It's just caused us to redirect our efforts into different market sectors and find ways to still take the talents of our team and push them forward into new projects and give us some new experiences, and we get to see what we can do in different market sectors.
Fantastic. Now, one of the things that's very clear trend, and of course, the regulations are local to each specific jurisdiction, but there's new energy codes, there are new financial incentives, for example, the Inflation Reduction Act to implement more efficient energy systems, solar, all manners of different types of energy efficiency. What is the impact that you're seeing from a design perspective? Of course, an architect can design anything. That doesn't mean it's going to be cost effective. How are you doing that in a manner that is still going to make the numbers work for your clients?
Yeah, good question. Probably the one of the largest challenges that we do have now, because energy codes are changing, or have changed, I should say. We've been waiting for probably years for that to happen. We've been told it's going to happen, and then it finally did. And the biggest impact there is obviously it does increase the cost of the development. Well, that throws off all kinds of different parts of a project, and especially when a developer or an owner is trying to make a project that ultimately will create a positive cash flow for their investment. And it's definitely becoming a challenge. We use what we have at our fingertips and our abilities to do our best to find out the life cycle impacts of those, because while it might affect your upfront cost, it will help you with energy, with bills, with energy efficiencies and lifestyle costs across the building. So we try our best to educate our owners with that. It definitely has been a challenge, because upfront cost does seem to be the most important factor. We try to be as creative as we can with our drawings to make sure that we are accurately reflecting what the needs of the code officials need, as well as balancing that with what the needs of our owners. It's definitely a challenge. I mean, it's adding construction costs. I mean, they're reducing the amount of glazing you can use on a building, and they're also, increasing the insulation values on the entire thermal envelope. It affects different types of buildings. It affects metal buildings, I've noticed, pretty significantly, especially when these metal building manufacturers don't have the standard details and or the standard insulation values with their systems to meet the criteria that's put forth. But it's definitely something we're working with all these companies, working with mechanical and electrical engineers, and doing our best to be able to educate the owners on what it is that they need to know so they can make the right decisions on moving forward with their investment.
Of course, it's jurisdiction dependent exactly how these systems need to be put together, but many of these are based on a point system. So you get so many points for, higher efficiency heat pumps, and so many points for low flow plumbing, and all these different things. The big ticket item, as I see it, is having to put an envelope of maybe 2 inches of rigid continuous insulation around the exterior of the building, that's a big ticket item for what is a modest increase in R value. The cost benefit really seems out of whack compared with some of the other things that could be done. What's your perspective as you go through the value engineering discussions with your owners, with your clients?
Yes, the rigid insulation envelope is one that we are constantly trying to figure out the best way to reach the values that we are required to, but also not blow up the construction costs too much for an owner. It changes all the details around the way a building goes together, as you know, and it's definitely a cost increase. It's something that we do feel is helpful for the building in the long run. But we have to be as cost conscious as possible while putting these types of details together. You know, for a little while there, we had buildings that were phased. The first phase, we have one large school where the first phase did not have those requirements, and the second phase is looking like it is having those requirements. And it's going to be difficult to tie those two buildings together where they're different. It's going to be difficult to explain to the owner that they have a construction cost increase here that they did not have here. Sometimes that can be handled with different approaches, such as like spray foam and whatnot. But it all depends on, like you said, the jurisdiction that you are in. Because while the codes that come out are a national code requirement, it is up to the local jurisdiction as to how much they want to enforce it. Obviously, that's different in different areas of the country, depending on what's more important in that particular area. You did mention solar. We have a large office building here in Covington that has an entire roof of solar panels on the building. And that's been something that's, we were able to speak with the owner. And while it doesn't offset all of the energy costs, they can definitely see some changes there. So that, with the rigid insulation requirements, as well as vestibule requirements, reduced glazing requirements, and the increased insulation values of glazing, we are able to at least notice that some of these owners are able to save a little bit of money in the long run. But the hard conversations in the beginning to explain that to them and educate them on that is something that we put a lot of effort into.
One of the things we've started exploring lately is, rather than doing the continuous insulation on the outside, standard framing is typically made out of 2x6 material. Our initial math is suggesting that if we were to use 2x8 material and just increase the insulation in the wall cavity, actually turns out to be cheaper than putting an extra layer of continuous insulation on the outside. I don't know if that actually complies with the new energy codes, but it achieves the same R value. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and you're right. We've looked at it many ways. I don't say get around that. Many ways to achieve what we need to achieve in regards to the required R value. And we've had a similar situation work in one jurisdiction where their code enforcement really just seemed to be concerned about the actual R value, whereas a completely different jurisdiction, they wanted to see the actual rigid insulation. So these codes are put forth. It depends on how they want to enforce them, as if you have to follow exactly, you have to meet the requirements in another way. We are finding many, many opportunities, just like you just explained, to put forth a prescriptive assembly, essentially, and say, all right, well, you need this R value, and you propose to hit it this way with rigid insulation, but what if we did this? And I truly believe that that's where some of these innovative products and designs come out. And as certain jurisdictions accept more and more of those and understand that we're actually reaching the same goal, while it might not be the same path to get there, that it's what's best for the building and the owners in the future and for their developments moving forward.
When we look at the solar systems, depending on the ownership structure, of course, I know that the Inflation Reduction Act is very clear and very prescriptive in terms of what the ownership structure is, whether you're going to get credit or not. And even the lenders themselves have gotten sophisticated in terms of whether they're going to give you credit for the income and so on, depending on what the income model is. But what's been your experience with the solar systems? Because if you do it right, theoretically, that additional income could contribute to the net operating income of the building, which would obviously increase the value of the building, just like rent or any other supplementary revenue stream.
Right. Yes. We don't get a ton of those opportunities in our market. But like I said, we did have a large office building that had the opportunity to put an entire roof up with solar panels that, like you said, would feed back into the system. While we haven't seen them actually necessarily, you know, put money back into the system. It definitely does reduce energy bills. And they've noted that because we've discussed it in the past to see about potential future other buildings. You know, you still need to be able to get, it's beneficial to get the tax benefits to put those systems on the buildings. And that allows it to be more affordable. And as these systems become more readily available, I believe that their costs, just like anything, is going to fall, which is going to make them more worthwhile and more valuable to and more palatable to put into a building design early on with all the other increases in construction value. So it's a bit of a hard sell at the time. But while those costs continue to fall, I do believe it's going to be a little more commonplace, and we're going to start utilizing other means of energy to limit carbon footprints and energy bills with all these developments.
One of the challenges with, especially in an area like Louisiana, where you've got hurricane codes to meet and things like that, those panels have to be mounted in a very secure manner, and you don't want to Swiss cheese the roof because now you're breaking the building envelope just to mount the solar panels. How do you do that effectively without adding a ton of cost?
Yes, good question. The one that we, that one worked out well because it was a flat roof, a TPO style roof. And you're right, we do not want to puncture that roof really at any point at all, not to mention every solar panel. So we had to get our structural engineers that had to be involved in that, obviously, because the weight that the system is going to add to the roof is a significant load. On top of that, the mounting system that this particular development, this particular building utilized was a weighted system. So it is as rudimentary as these panels are sitting up on the roof, all lined up, and they have concrete blocks holding each one down to the substrate of the roof. Now, that allows for no penetrations, which is great, but it does add a significant amount of live load to the structure. So as long as that's designed in the from the onset, or that the structural system can handle that type of weight, this application worked very well for us. There's also the parapet height exceeds the height of the panels when you look at the from the elevation of the outside of the building. So it does protect it from the wind and uplift and other issues that you would typically have had these been on a sloped roof, like a hip or a gable roof exposed to the elements. So we utilize gravity here, and it's been great since we haven't had any issues. But you are right on roofs and applications where we're a little more exposed to the wind, and we don't have to, if we're more concerned about fastening to the roof where we cannot use a weighted assembly type, then it's definitely can present its challenges.
Love it. Well, Justin, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Yeah, you can reach out to us. Our website's updated daily at greenleafarchitects.com or anywhere on social media. We're fairly active with that. We're here. We work Southern Louisiana, but like we said, we are everywhere from Texas to Florida and not afraid to move out of that range. And we just love working with the right clients and the right developments where we can all put our best foot forward and have a happy client in the end. So they can reach out anywhere online. We're pretty easy to find on social media and everything.
Well, and before we wrap up, I think it's worth mentioning that you were the architect on our Sage Oak Assisted Living project, which in 2021 won the National Senior Housing News Architectural Design Award for that year.
Yes, thank you. You're right. And that was, that, like you said, that was after our last talk on our last podcast. That's an awesome one. We've had another design award fairly recently, and it's been really cool to see because you get into this and you don't know how it's going to turn out, but never did I expect to be winning any kind of design awards or not at least this early in our company's history. So thank you for that. It was an awesome project, and it was very well recognized, and it seems as though the project is still doing very, very well, and it's providing a place, a nice place for seniors to enjoy the remaining fun years of their life. So we're happy that the project went as well as it did, and we're happy it was recognized and very, very grateful for the opportunity.
Fantastic. Well, Justin, great to catch up. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Justin Greenleaf at greenleafarchitects.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.